Hey friends, it's Ian from TV's The Recovering Gleek, Ugly Podcast. When Lena and I first decided to make this podcast, we quickly realized we had literally zero idea of how to make that happen. Thankfully, a friend of ours recommended the podcasting platform Anchor. Anchor is free. It has all of the tools you need to record and edit your podcast from your phone or computer. You can even add songs from Spotify into it. And the absolute most amazing thing about Anchor is that they will distribute your podcast for you. So anywhere that you listen to Recovering Gleek, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever weird third-party app you're using, it is there because Anchor put it there. And the icing on the cake is that you can make money from your podcast through Anchor with no minimum listenership. All you have to do is record an ad, which is why I am recording an ad right now, because I want money very badly. It is everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
How did your second dose of the COVID vaccine go, buddy?
It went fine. I was never like super miserable, but I was always just a little bit off.
Yeah, totally.
And frankly, it might have affected this podcast because
how?
I watched original songs while I was like on the couch the day after the shot, and I did not have a good time. And I frankly don't know if I legitimately don't like the episode or if I was just getting over the COVID vaccine.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Okay, one, two, three.
Sinkaroni! I wonder how good the Wi-Fi is going to be in my new apartment.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you won't have to worry about it because we'll be recording live from now on.
I know.
You guys, fun fact, this is Lena Mai's last. I mean, we still have the minisode tomorrow, but when you're listening to this, you will have already heard the minisode. So this is our last episode for like a few months where we have to be over Zoom.
Yeah, we will be together from now till October.
Because we are working on a show together.
Thank you, Jesus.
We are finally employed actors again.
Oh my God, I'm so grateful. Ian and I both got jobs. Can you believe that we both got jobs in the same show and like... Well, I mean, we've worked there together before, so it's not that crazy. But just like, I'm so grateful that you and I get to be together this summer and work the on best, the podcast.
The best part is that you got the job offer like a week before I did.
I got the job offer like a week and a half before you did.
Yeah, like a few days before.
It was very sad. Like, it was probably like a month before.
It wasn't that much. It was.
I know.
Like,
I'm kidding. Oh, okay. I thought we were doing a thing where you kept going down and I kept going up.
It was like an hour before. Like you texted me and then I got the call right after.
Yeah, it was like, you know, I got hand offered like, you know, like 3 years ago this part, you know.
Yeah, it was like they were on the call with you and then they're like, we're gonna make this a conference call. They dialed me up. I got patched in. No, but you did legitimately get the call like a little over a week before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the job offer, you know, however many days later, and I
up to debate.
Between 2 seconds and 3 years later, I got the offer, and I went to tell you, and the first thing you said is, thank goodness my mother will be so relieved.
Dude, straight up. Well, you and I were together doing Daddy Long Legs, and I got the offer, and I couldn't tell you this at the time because I was like, oh God, I don't want to make him feel bad if I end up getting a job and you didn't. But me and my mom were like, what are we going to do? That's going to be so terrible. And then my mom was like, Ian needs a win. That's so funny. But she's very proud of you for getting a job. But I'm very proud of you for getting a job and very grateful. I was straight up nervous that you were going to get the job and I wouldn't. And that I was going to look at you all puppy dog eyes all summer. And then it did a weird switcheroo for 3 seconds to 3 years. but I'm very grateful that you and I can be working actors again. My God.
So get ready for some live episodes, baby.
Oh.
in the same room, ones. No more lag.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Ian and I are working at the Utah Shakespeare Festival this summer. We are both in the Pirates of Penzance together. Ian plays the chief of, sergeant of police?
Sergeant,
and I,
yes.
The sergeant, sorry. And I...
I was very offended that
Dude,
you said
I
chief.
Hate cops. and then I play Edith. Who she's one of the sisters. And then I'm in the Comedy of Errors. I play a few parts in the Comedy of Errors. And then you are in Ragtime mm-hmm. in the Ensemble.
The Ensemble.
So exciting. So proud of us. Now that our corner of the episode is done, or we can brag about us being at working actors again, thank you, Theater Jesus. Let's talk about Glee, shall we?
Let's talk about Glee, baby. Yes. Hello, everyone. My name is Ian Allred, and I am a working actor.
Damn it,
finally,
I was gonna say that.
Gleek.
Oh, what's up, you guys? My name is Lena Knatzer, and I am also a working actor, but who happens to be a Gleek part-time.
Oh! I had to change my Twitter bio now. It used to say out-of-work actor, in-of-work delivery person, and
that's
now
funny.
That's swapped. Thank you.
Bio for what? Twitter?
For Twitter, just like my oh. Twitter bio. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, what's my Twitter bio? Co-host of Recovering Gleek. She, her, hers.
Ayo. You know, straight to the point.
You know me, I'm a simple woman. You know, okay, so recently a TikTok thing has been happening that is like, I'm not the main character, I'm the slutty best friend. Mm-hmm. And I think, hear me out, you guys. Maybe I shouldn't say this on the podcast because maybe it makes me sound bad. I had this conversation with my roommate, and she says that she is the side character who is far more interesting than the main character, who everyone watches the show and is like, very clearly, like, she's the Phoebe Buffay, where mm-hmm. it's like everyone wants the show to be about her. Mm-hmm. I'm the Rachel Green, where it's like, I'm the boring one. I am the main character. Do you know what I mean? Do you feel like you're the main character?
I don't feel like you're the boring one at all. I also, but I don't think that Rachel is boring.
Oh, thank you.
So, huh?
I feel like I see so much Rachel online, like people hating on Rachel. People also hate on Rachel Berry. Let's talk about her. Speaking of.
Great segue. You want to give us some glats?
Oh, God, I'm dying to. Listen, you guys, the sacred texts were plentiful this week. Let's party.
Oh, yeah, it's time for the glats.
So before we start, I wanted to Google how many gaps were in Ohio, because Blaine says there's tons of gaps in Ohio, and he was not wrong. There are 8 gaps in Ohio, and 14 if you include baby gaps.
Which, of course, you would.
Right, so 14. I could be wrong, but this is just, I Googled gap Ohio and counted on Google how many there were. So I could be wrong, but that's a ton of gaps. I think there's like 3 in Utah.
Really?
Yes.
I feel like that's not that many gaps. How many gaps are in Arizona? This is so important.
It's important to me.
There are, I guess I just truly think, I think there's a gap everywhere I look. I don't know where I got that from because I looked it up and it looks like there's only 7 in Arizona. So Ohio has its beat. And Ohio is like marginally smaller than Arizona.
But it is more densely populated than Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's what I was thinking about Utah is like, it's, you know, everyone just lives along the highway.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. No, yeah, Arizona yeah, yeah, yeah. is like everyone lives in the valley, which is the Phoenix area.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have like a pocket in Flagstaff and a pocket in Tucson. And then mm-hmm. it's just no man's land. Like
yeah.
the rest of Arizona. I mean, obviously there are some exceptions. Like, don't come at me if you're like, I don't live in those places.
Like, hold on. Yeah.
But like so much of the rest of Arizona is like a little pop-up town off the freeway that has yeah. like 300 people in it. And then like mm-hmm. nothing for miles.
Literally. Yeah. Utah's the same. It's like very densely populated from like Logan to Provo. And then it's no man's land. And then it's Cedar City.
Mm-hmm. There are a few in Arizona, and this is like, there are like a few, like very, very few, but there are some towns that are straight up like just a street. Like you drive down it mm-hmm. and it's like just the main street with like the necessities, and then you'll drive and see like a few houses scattered in the wilderness, and that's it.
Yeah, literally.
It's the Wild West out there.
I know, that's the thing. We live in the Wild West. Ugh. Well, that was my glact about the gap. It's not in the sacred text, but I might go in and put it in the sacred text. I also have never been to Ohio, so who even knows? Okay, so Original Song is the 16th episode of Glee's second season and the 38th episode overall, and it premiered on the motherfucking Ides of March, March 15th, 2011.
Ooh, that's the Ides of March. That's real disrespectful to Julius.
I know, right?
Yeah, poor guy.
That's why Rachel gets stabbed in the episode.
Honestly, hear me out. I would have loved if this episode ended with every member of the Glee Club stabbing Rachel.
Stabbing Rachel. She is the Julius Caesar of this club.
She is. And I wrote in my notes this episode, I said, the other shoe has dropped. I don't like Rachel.
Literally. Rachel's a mess in this episode.
I find her so grating and annoying in this episode. Mm-hmm. I agree. Find her like charming or funny.
Which sucks because I feel like two episodes ago, I was like, Rachel is my favorite person who's ever lived. I love her.
Blame it on the alcohol. I was like, I just don't get it. I still love her. Like, I know a lot of people don't, but like, I still think she's the best.
No,
and
literally.
And then this episode rolled around and she won the MVP award. And I was like, literally, I get it.
So we'd stab her too. We're Brutus and Rachel is Caesar. And then she looks at us and goes, et tu, recovering Gleek.
And we are like, Lena and Ian are just as cute as Rachel. Lena and Ian are just as popular as Rachel. People totally like Lena and Ian just as much as they like Rachel. Maybe we should all just stab Rachel.
That's what I'm saying.
100%.
Glad we're on the same page. This episode was written and was directed, pardon me, by Bradley Bucher and written by Ryan Murphy, which is not surprising in the slightest. This episode is dripping with Ryan Murphy.
No wonder.
Literally. When you said you didn't like it, I was like, of course you didn't like it.
Yeah.
It's Ryan Murphy.
It's got his fingerprints all over it.
Straight up, everything about it is so Ryan Murphy to me. Okay, so most of my glacks this week are about songs. So let's get into some songs. So we have Misery, originally by Maroon 5. Have I told you my theory about Maroon 5?
No.
Okay. And don't come... Okay, come for me in the comments if you must. Have you ever met a person whose favorite band is Maroon 5? I don't think so. Maybe.
If
maybe
it was like 2004, yes. Recently, no.
I have a theory that Adam Levine sold his soul to the devil to make Maroon 5 very successful, but with the caveat that they are no one's favorite band. So that's my theory. I just thought I would point that out. But yes, this song is originally by the Maroon 5s, performed by the Dawson Academy Warblers / Blaine and the Pips. And then we get into some only... original songs. We have Only Child, performed by Rachel Berry. This song, so there's a second verse to this song that was released after the episode aired. This song was written by James S. Levine and co-creator Ian Brennan, like a lot of the original songs. So the second verse was released, hear me out, on Tap Tap Motherfucking Glee.
No way!
Yes way! God, I want to download that app.
That's like the Ark of the Covenant was hidden in that game. Literally, like, oh my honestly, gosh.
I'm sure it's on YouTube, but that's where it was released. And then we have Blackbird performed by the Dalton Academy Warblers featuring our boy Kurt, originally by, I don't know if you've ever heard of them. Is this little band called The Beatles? I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Are they like an indie group?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not a lot of people have heard of them.
Yeah, they're kind of underground. They're kind of like just our thing.
They're just like this like British like pop rock band. You wouldn't really get it. So this is the first of five times the Warblers sing with an instrumental accompaniment. This is the first time that they've ever not done a cappella song. Isn't that very exciting?
Yeah.
The other songs they sing with accompaniment are Somewhere Only We Know, Help, All You Need Is Love, and Tightrope.
Two of those are Beatles songs.
Literally. Well, I mean, it's Blackbird, Help, and All You Need Is Love. That's three.
Well, I was saying two of the other four that you listed.
Oh, well, do you know who the Beatles are?
No, I don't.
So I don't think you know what you're talking about. I think you meant three.
Yes.
They're just kidding. Sorry, buddy. No, I know what you mean. I'm sorry. Yeah. Crazy, right? Well, I think it makes sense, too, because why would you want to a cappella style the Beatles? They're just this little indie band that no one's ever heard of. You don't want to, like, do wrong by them.
You don't want people's first exposure to the Beatles to be a cappella. Yeah,
absolutely. But all jokes aside, I think people have a lot of opinions about the Beatles. And, like, I think people would get pissed.
It's like untouchable. You don't want to be like, here's a fun, different cover. And then people are like, how dare you? That literally, was God's word and you butchered it.
I know so many people who are like that with the Beatles, including, hear me out, I'm going to call you out on the air, Dad. My dad, like, hates, like, any sort of Beatles cover ever because, like, he just thinks it's, like, you know, the sacred text.
The Beatles are great. Don't get me wrong, everyone. The Beatles are great. But the only sacred text is Glee Wiki.
Glee Wiki. Motherfuckers, they don't even know.
Seriously, the Beatles can, you know, they were talented, but they will never be Glee Wiki.
No. No. They're just this little band. Whatever. People are going to kill us. This is the second Beatles song that Kurt sings. So Kurt has had two Beatles solos so far, which is very exciting. Mm. And this is the very first song that the Warblers sing that doesn't feature Blaine as a soloist. Wow. Blaine and the Pips. I know. Crazy. And then we have Drowning My Love. Naya Rivera has said in an interview that the song turned out really sexy, like much more sexy than she was anticipating or intended. She was like, yeah, I don't know what happened back there, which is so funny. I feel like that kind of shit happens to me all the time where it's like, where did that energy come from? This song was written and was written by, again, James S. Levine and Ian Brennan. And we have Tina on the keys. So from this point on, this is truly the birth of the phrase and nickname Trouty Mouth. Very exciting, very exciting. And then we have, next song is Big Ass Heart, performed by Noah Puckerman. This song was written by the show's music producer, Adam Anders, and Ian Brennan. And so two songs from this episode, like the people, the Gleeks, demanded be released. Can you guess which ones they are?
I mean, Big Ass Heart, because why would you have placed
Yeah, I'm
there?
Sorry. But guess the other one.
Is it Trouty Mouth? I'd say Loser Like Me, but...
Oh, that no, that seems, one was... That
was like
that one.
Already. Yeah, that's true. The regional songs probably were given. Big Ass Heart and Hell to the No.
No, it's Trouty Mouth and Big Ass Heart, which pisses me off to no end. Why would they ever release Big Ass Heart and not Hell to the No? Pisses me off. Anyway, we'll get into it later. And then we have Hell to the No, performed by Mercedes Jones. This cover was never released and doesn't show up on iTunes. This song was written by Adam Anders and Ian Brennan. This song's lyrics mention multiple plot lines that Mercedes has been involved in, and I'll go through them with you. So Mercedes spells R-S-P-E-C-T, respect, during the song. And that was her Glee Club audition song in the pilot episode. And then she talks about how they tried to take away her tots, which is a reference to The Substitute. And then she references the diva off. She says, Take me, you can leave me, but I won't ever change. And then she says, they try and make me change my eats. And that's a reference to when Sue told her to lose 10 pounds to stay in the Cheerios. And then also in the sacred text, it mentions that it could be a reference to Dakota Johnson giving her the personal menu of coffee. Just kidding, Dakota Stanley. And that's in Acapellas. So, yeah, soup's fun. And then we have Candles by Hey Monday.
Hey Monday.
Literally, Hey Monday.
Glad to have you listening.
I know. Chris Colfer says that this is not one of his favorite performances, and he just like altogether thinks it's like a weird choice. He said, why are they singing a breakup song when they just got together? And then he also said that he dislikes the recording of this song, so I assume that means he doesn't like the way he sounds in it. This is the third Kurt and Blaine duet to be featured on the show, with Baby It's Cold Outside and Animal, and then this one. And then this is the only duet lead performed by the Warblers at a competition ever. And then it's the only duet sung by two male characters at a competition ever.
Ayo.
And then, I mean, that's not something to celebrate, but.
That's true.
We shouldn't be like, woohoo! Yay, only one guy! Being gay is wrong, you guys. Just kidding, it's definitely not.
I'm with Kathy Griffin on this one.
We're super not, okay? And then we have Get It Right, performed by Rachel Berry and the New Directions. And then we have Loser Like Me. So Loser Like Me was submitted for two Grammys. I don't know that it was nominated, but it was submitted. Yeah.
I wish I had that kind of confidence in myself.
I know. Well, I mean,
to I guess. Submit Loser Like Me for a Grammy.
Literally. In an early draft of the script, Quinn and Rachel write this song together. Glad they changed it to being the rest of the club writes it, because I think that is more fun. This song debuted and peaked at number 6 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 chart, making it the second most successful Glee song of all time.
What?
I know. Right, crazy. So Kevin McHale revealed that he recorded the entire song. So every background and every lead, but he got cut from the song.
That?
I know.
And this, I had this thought while I was watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Finn Hudson singing this song?
Literally.
About how, like, I'm such a loser, no one understands me. In this episode, Quinn says that Finn is first in the running for prom king.
Literally. Everyone loves him. He's totally not a loser at all.
It should have been Artie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they needed a male soloist, Artie makes the most sense. Why did they give it to Finn? It makes me so angry.
I have no idea.
Ugh.
Yeah. So that is that. When I read that glact, I like gasped. And it was also revealed in a leaked script that there was a cut scene involving Quinn and Rachel. They probably made out.
I was literally about to say that. It is
probably not
overt in this episode.
Yeah. Oh my lands. This whole episode is a Faberry watch. That is truly the saving grace of this episode. this episode has the second amount of songs featured in a series, the first being the plot. And it has a total of 12 songs, but only 9 were released.
The first being the pilot?
Did I say the plot? I'm sorry. I don't know if you know this. I have dyslexia. The pilot. Because the pilot has everyone's like audition songs and everything. That makes sense to
me. Yeah.
But this one has lots of songs. And then this is the fan voted all time favorite episode according to Glee's Final Countdown. I know. That is bananas to me.
Oh,
really crazy.
I'm going to need to have a sit down with the fans. We all need to take a hard look in the mirror. I really question some of our life choices.
I know.
Oh, my word.
I know. I mean, this episode, while I don't think it is the best episode, it is iconic. Like, I think this is, like, pretty quintessential Glee in the other shoe side of it. You know, like, it's, like, not good, but also it's the bad things of Glee that we think of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I just felt very underwhelmed by this episode.
Yeah, I hear that. Well, those are the ends of, that's the end of my glact.
All right.
I don't know why I said that phrase like that, but that's the end of my glact. God, conjugating verbs is hard.
All right, you guys, time for the recap.
Yay.
Did you hear me start that down the octave and then realize it was too low and
That's funny.
All right.
All right.
Here's what you missed on Glee. It's regionals. Kurt grieves the passing of the Warblers mascot, and Blaine realizes his feelings for Kurt. Blaine decides to share the spotlight with him, and they kiss. Quinn teams up with Rachel to keep her away from Finn while the New Directions work on original songs. After being rejected by Brittany, Santana goes back to Sam. Rachel channels her pain from learning Finn is back with Quinn into her songwriting and leads the New Directions to victory against the Warblers and Sue's team, Aural Intensity. After the competition, the Glee Club votes for Rachel as the regionals MVP. And that's what you missed on Glee!
Woo!
All right, Lena, what are your overall thoughts on this episode?
Overall thoughts of this episode. Very, very queer with our girls, Quinn and Rachel. True. With my parents. Other than that, Rachel is so annoying in this episode.
Oh my goodness.
It is, like, so weird. And, like, I'm glad that Kurt and Blaine are finally together, but, like, God, at what cost? There are some, like, plots in their plot that I'm like, God, like, who put this in there? Like, choices that were made where I was like, who wrote this? And, like, moments where I was like, the most cheesy dialogue you could ever give a human person, and I'm pissed about it, and, like, I felt like it was not out of nowhere, because I know they've been, like, revving it up, like, they're gonna get together, but, like, just in this episode, I was like, God. Ugh. But like I said, pretty iconic. Like, there are moments in this episode that are some, like, Glee Corps memories. Maybe that's just how I feel about season two. Stands to be seen. Some golden moments, I think, but, yeah. How do you feel? I know you said you're underwhelmed.
Yeah. I don't want, like, here's the rule of this podcast always, you guys. You don't have to agree with us.
Like, no, not at all.
We may love an episode that you hate. We may hate an episode that you love. No one is right. No one is wrong.
So, no, like, not at all.
Please, if you are one of these people who, like, this is your favorite episode of all time, that is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I thought it was the worst competition episode we've had so far.
Easy.
I would say possibly the worst in the entire run of the show.
Yeah.
There's a few contenders that might take that crown, like season four sectionals, but
we'll get there when we get there.
But, like, this one is up there, I think.
Yeah, and, like, the competition numbers in general, mm-hmm, are, like, super underwhelming. And I was like, I should, like, rank these how I would rank them. And I'm like, I won't even do it. I will not even do it because I'm so disappointed in it.
No, literally in season two sectionals, in our episode on that, starring Shane and Vicky from Shane and Vicky's DCOM Clubhouse, mm-hmm, everyone check it out. You, Lena, because we're talking about, like, how is it that they're able to tie and move two people onto regionals? Like, how is there empty space? And you, Lena, you make a joke where you're like, well, maybe the East Central sectionals were just so bad that they were like, no one wins. And I, watching this episode, was like, no one wins.
No one wins.
There's an extra spot at nationals because all three teams lost.
Yeah, literally.
Seriously, every number I was like, this is what we're doing? Like, they weren't all bad, but not a single one of them was, like, exciting. Like, there was there was no, like, can't always get what you want. There was no, like, love and touch and squeezing. There was no Valerie. Like, there was no number that I was like, this, like, is living.
Right. Like, get it right. Like, in comparison to, like, freaking, God, Barbara Streisand. Like, yeah. The funny girl number is nothing.
Like, sorry, Rachel.
So underwhelming.
You got it wrong.
Yeah.
That
you got
number
it wrong, sister.
Is not nationals worthy.
No, it's not. Okay, you guys. I know I was in the middle of a thought. I don't remember my thought. I accidentally unplugged my entire microphone. Very sorry. We had to work quickly. What was I talking about?
You're talking about Get It Right and how it didn't live up to Don't Rain on My Parade.
Yes. And I think I was working up to the thought, I was so underwhelmed by all of these performances that I could see the New Directions winning out of this group specifically because they wrote the songs. Like, it's a high school competition. Like, I don't know that they deserve to win, mm-hmm, but I could see judges being like, they did write their songs. And the songs are, like, whole realized like songs. They're not like, you know, my headband.
Yeah.
So I could see how they won, and I'm not angry that they won. I just think, like, God, we've seen the Warblers do way better than this. Like, not that Hey Soul Sister is good, but like, God, they perform better in their hallways. Like, what is the problem here?
Right. I was like, Misery was by far the best Warblers number this episode. And Kurt literally talked Blaine out of performing it. And the numbers they chose instead were terrible.
Stupid.
I mean, Raise Your Glass.
I think Raise Your Glass is good.
Raise Your Glass I don't love, but I think it's fine. Yeah. I think Raise Your Glass is maybe the best performance of the bunch.
I think so.
But I think I agree with Chris Colfer. I think Candles is such an odd pick. Odd. And also, like, the execution of it is so poor.
Odd.
That it kind of, like, negates any points that were gained by Raise Your Glass.
I think so. I really think so. Like, the... And I... it is so weird. And, like... I don't know how you want to break up this episode. I'm kind of just going crazy. There are like plot points I want to get to, but
yeah, I was going to do before, during, after, like before competition, the competition, after the competition. Yeah. And we can do like Dalton before and then McKinley before.
Let's talk about Dalton before. We're into the Dalton.
All right. Oh yeah.
That song rocks. That song rocks. It's incredible. Very the good. Choreography is incredible. They're all having a blast. Blaine Warbler sounds incredible. And like, it's the show. They should have kept it. Like, if I were writing the show, I would have put Raise Your Glass.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not an anthem, though. Like, Raise Your Glass is an anthem, and like, Misery isn't really an anthem. It's like a more ballad, is it? I don't know.
It's a Misery to all the simps out there.
Yeah. I guess.
Everyone who's like, I'm so head over heels in love with this person who like literally could not care less about me.
Oh, I hear that. It's a ballad for the simps.
Mm-hmm. It's an anthem.
It's an anthem for the simps. Sorry, I forgot the words. I truly don't really know what an anthem is, I guess.
I feel like you could take any song and be like, here's how it's anthem. An anthem. And then just like find a reason.
My headband is my anthem. But even still, like, I think I would have switched them because that song is incredible. But I guess they don't want them to be too good because they don't want them to win, I guess.
They would have won
with that number. It's so stupid. That's why they need an adult. This Warbler Council thing is bullshit. They need a professor to come in and be like, okay, can we sit down and actually think about the songs we're picking for a second? Redonkulous. Also, my main gripe with the Warblers plot, not specifically the Blaine and Kurt plot, is Blaine stands up and is like, you guys, this is ridiculous. This is a kangaroo court. And like, you know, everyone is like freaking out because it's like, Blaine, what song do you want to sing? Blaine. And he's like, listen, you guys, it's not Blaine and the Pips. We should give more people voices. But also, give me the duet. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, Blaine, mm-hmm. like, how fucking performative could you be? It is so stupid. It pisses me off. Like, they should have just given Kurt a solo. Well, like, this plot point is moot to me. It is stupid. They should have just given him a solo. Because I understand why plot-wise Blaine would want to sing a duet specifically to hang out with Kurt. But he should have just been like, Kurt, you do a solo. I will coach you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it should have been. Because this whole, like, Blaine standing up being like, you guys, we're not Blaine and the Pips is so bullshit. Bye. Because then he still gets the solo. And he's, like, essentially the lead on Candles.
And he still gets Raise Your Glass.
Literally.
That's the thing. Is Blaine is like, you guys, I've had a come to Jesus moment. I've realized that I cannot hog the spotlight. And so I am going to give half a song to the guy I like and am trying to impress.
Truly a fourth of my spotlight.
I will give no one else a chance. Mm-mm. And then the next song, guess what? Blaine and the Pips is back.
And
it's
listen,
so dumb.
I buy that the Warblers are so set in their ways that like they think that their best chance of winning is with Blaine. I buy that. I understand that. And that doesn't bother me. it bothers me to no end that they have this like moment with Blaine where he realizes that like this club isn't letting anyone else learn. But then it's for the wrong reasons. He doesn't want to give Kurt the solo because he thinks that Kurt will do a good job. He wants to give Kurt the solo so he can like make out with him. That's it. Mm-hmm. And he even says, he's like, well, I picked you because I thought we could spend more time together. It's not because he believes in Kurt.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Yeah. I do think it's funny that the entire board of directors are Blaine stans.
I know. I love that. I mean, aren't we all?
And it's very clearly the writers referencing the real life fans of the show. The way that they're like, well, I actually think that the Blaine version is better than the original version. Yeah. And the way that they are like so obsessed with him. I do think that that scene is very funny for that reason.
So funny. I also love how they always reference each other with like Warbler as their title. So Warbler Blaine. And the way that they're like, may I address the council, feels so Jedi to me. Like, it is so funny. Like, just the dynamic of this club is so funny to me. I love the Warblers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hilarious. Like, those guys are funny.
Mm-hmm. Back to Misery really fast. Mm-hmm. Did Blaine just have all those papers in his hands because he wanted to make an entrance?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Were they texting him and they were like, Blaine, like, we're supposed to rehearse. Where are you? And he's like, hold up. I'm sorry. The printer is taking so long.
Getting the prop.
Just, I'll be there as soon as possible. Just so he could be like, oh, yeah, throw him in the air.
It is very exciting to look at. I do love a confetti moment.
And also, was this like a surprise for Kurt? Like,
I know.
Everyone is very aware that this is happening. And Kurt has this reaction of like, what's going on? And I understand that it is Kurt being like, Blaine of the Pips again. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all just his backup. Mm-hmm. But he does also at the beginning truly look so lost as to like, oh, are we practicing like, now? Oh, I wasn't aware that's what was happening.
Warbler's practice is now in the hallway? Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Super weird.
Also, on our tally of pointless Blaine numbers that don't further the plot at all, which was brought up in a minisode, this is our fifth one so far.
I mean, it is...
It's granted, very good.
Every song so far has been a certified banger.
Well, that's the thing, is like, in this episode, the worst Blaine song by a mile is Candles.
Yeah.
But Candles actually furthers the plot.
Yeah.
Whereas this song, which is the best Blaine song in the episode, mm-hmm. it's the one that could very easily just be snipped out and the show would still run the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, moving on from the Warblers, maybe let's talk about Kurt and Blaine.
Mm-hmm.
Blaine, if you will.
If I was entrusted, this club that like I just joined, I'm the newest member, and I was entrusted to watch their mascot, who is not only their mascot, but came from a long line of previous mascots. Like, it is a dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
And that bird died on my watch, mm-hmm. I would transfer schools.
Oh, yeah.
I well, would be...
We'll see.
You have a point there. You have a point there. But I would, like, have a panic attack. Mm-hmm. Be like, they are going to kick me out of the club. Yeah. I'm going to be ostracized. This, like, I have ruined everything. This is a tradition that's been going on for generations, and I have broken
Kurt has
it.
The audacity to show up in street clothes, in, like, morning street clothes.
Right?
He's not even in his Warbler uniform, and he, like, it's so... like, I understand. It's totally not Kurt's fault that Pavarotti passed, mm-hmm. but I totally understand where you're coming from, too. Like... I would transfer schools.
Braver man than me.
Oh, literally. I wouldn't come back.
I'd be a basket case after that happened. I'd be like, literally. Dad, we are moving. I cannot live here anymore.
I can't go to Dalton Academy. That is the place where I sleep. So I couldn't. I also, hear me out, the Pavarotti scene, like that 15-second scene with like Kurt buffing his nails and then singing with Pavarotti and then looking back and Pavarotti like just like going, you just hear a like I laughed my tail off. That is, it was like way too funny. So funny. I'm like, it has no business being that funny. Then he sings Blackbird, which I think it's a beautiful rendition of the song for sure. I think we've talked about this too, you and I, like in passing. I try really hard not to talk to you about Glee anymore, but I think we have talked about this. It makes me so angry that this song is not about Kurt mourning. It is about Blaine falling in love with Kurt, which like is a beautiful moment. Don't get me wrong. And I think those could happen simultaneously, but the entire number is just Blaine looking at him, which is beautiful, but it could have been like cut into thirds and we could have kept a third of it. And like the rest could have been Kurt. It just felt sad. I just was like, I was angry about it. I was like, I want to see Kurt. I want to see Kurt working through this rather than Blaine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, if Kurt knew that all he had to do to get with Blaine was kill a bird, he would have bumped that thing off months ago.
Literally, that's called two birds with one stone. literally.
It is, which I understand that it is, like, when you see a person that you know, like, reveal a new emotional depth to themselves they haven't seen before, it can, like, it does make you see them in a different way. So, like, I do understand that.
Yeah, and I hear that this is the moment where Blaine realizes, like, that he loves Kurt, like, or has feelings for Kurt. Like, I totally hear that. I think that's totally more than reasonable and more than likely.
I also hear the faintest echoes of a savior complex. Well, where Blaine is like, Kurt's finally broken. I'm in love.
I think that Blaine is an Enneagram 2. Go check out Typecasting. I think that is pretty on brand for Blaine. I think that's a pretty type 2 thing to do. But yeah, it is a pretty savior complexy thing to do. Do you think Ryan Murphy has a savior complex? He probably loves to be that guy who like, or maybe no, or is Kurt, or he's the Kurt where he wants to be comforted when something bad happens to him.
Think of how many life lessons that man tried to cram into this show. He sure has a savior complex.
So true. You're so right. Yeah. You're so right. I mean, hear me out. I love a hurt comfort like plot line as much as the next bitch. I am only human, but I do wish it was more Kurt. It makes me sad.
Yum.
And then we have this scene where Blaine comes in and is like, he has that line that is like so iconic. And this is one of the moments that I think is like pretty iconic about the episode. I wrote it down because that line is so beautiful. He says, oh, there you are. I've been looking for you forever. Like, love that line. So beautiful. Mm-hmm. And like, it's so sweet. What did you think of that scene?
Truly the kiss heard around the world. The kiss that sent Victoria Jackson angrily onto Showbiz Tonight to talk about how Glee was poisoning America. Have you seen that interview?
No.
So Victoria Jackson is an actor who was on SNL like back in the 80s. And then like really never really did anything else. Like she was on SNL and she's like in a movie with Weird Al Yankovic also in the 80s. And then like kind of just disappeared. And when this episode came out, she was like, no! And there's an interview of her on Showbiz Tonight where she is just talking about like how terrible it is to have this kiss on television. And like children are watching this show and blah, 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 blah.
Homophobes need to shut the fuck up. I'm so over that. That is so annoying. She like went on TV. Who gave her the like who would greenlight that?
Showbiz Tonight.
I
That's
mean like
who.
I'd like to talk to them.
Ugh. They were like, wow, you were on TV 35 years
Come
ago.
On
sure,
in.
We'll give you a platform to talk about this.
Idiots. That is so stupid.
Yeah. No, I like this scene. I think it's a very good scene. I just don't find Blaine very interesting.
I know you don't.
I love that he and Kurt are now together. I just don't like how this show is, like, this episode is much more from Blaine's perspective and not Kurt's, because I'm like,
sure.
Your perspective is the most milquetoast thing I've ever seen.
I know, I care more about about Kurt, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. But the scene itself I think is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's nice to like have Kurt you know, have a good thing happen to him for once after, like, truly just getting beaten down.
I know.
For what, like, 38 episodes now?
Yeah, I know.
Goodness sakes.
Yeah, I'm really glad that our boy Kurt gets a W. Back to how long did he keep Pavarotti's body?
Yeah. Because they don't bury it until after.
No, so I assume that this regionals, sectionals, I don't know, you guys. I've never seen this show. Happens on Saturday. When did Pavarotti pass away? They have to have like a couple days in between because they have to have the next Warblers Council and Kurt and Blaine have to rehearse.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume those are two separate days. So it could be like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday.
Yeah, I would say
he's been carrying around a dead bird. I feel so bad for him.
Yeah, I would say at the latest, Pavarotti died on like Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And then they buried him at the earliest Saturday night, but I would say probably like Sunday.
Well, it was during the day. It was,
oh my gosh, yeah. So it was Saturday or, I mean, Sunday,
Sunday
or Monday.
Morning, yeah. Oof. Anyway, I just needed to point that out because this show has no concept of a timeline.
You want to hear something embarrassing?
Yeah.
Whenever I hear Goodnight, Sweet Prince, my first thought is not
Hamlet. Shut your mouth.
It is Pavarotti's
funeral.
That
is so funny.
And also, Kurt doesn't even say goodnight. He says like farewell or something. But that, like, immediately I'm like, oh, yeah,
yeah,
from
every
Glee.
Time you see
and
Hamlet,
then I'm like,
oh.
No, from the most famous play of all time.
Yeah, Billy Shakes is a big Ryan Murphy fan. He's a big Klain shipper.
He and Victoria Jackson would not get along.
No, not at all. Well, you know.
Goodness sakes.
That's how I feel about the Warblers. Do you have more Warbler thoughts?
The stomp chorus on Misery is great. That's my other thought. Truly, why didn't they do that?
I know.
Regionals?
It makes no sense.
Let's go to our much more interesting friends, the New Directions.
The Nude Erections. Did you notice that Ian Brennan, who announces them, he fully says New Directions. Nude Erections when he announces them. He's like, ladies and gentlemen, the Nude Erections. Like, he
good
fully says
him.
It. He fully says it. And then Rachel cries.
It's to counteract the fact that Lea Michele then says, we are the New Directions.
This show is all about balance. This show is all about balance.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Okay, so let's talk about the Nude Erections before sectionals, regionals, regionals, right?
Yes. Someone is like mowing their lawn right outside my window.
Oof.
So if that's getting picked up by my microphone, I'm very sorry, everyone.
Why are they mowing the lawn? Well, it's 7 o'clock. I mean, I guess it is getting cooler.
They're trying to beat the sunset.
I hear that. Dude, did you mow lawns growing up?
Mm-hmm.
I only mowed lawns recently. Last year, to get $10 a week from my parents, I mowed the lawn. But I had never mowed lawns before. I wasn't allowed.
Oh.
Hear me out. I don't think of like settling down, getting married, having kids very frequently, but the height of success to me is owning a home with a lawn that is big enough that I can justify getting a sittable lawnmower and taking mom time where I go sit on the lawnmower, like on a Sunday morning, no one speaks to me and I mow my lawn. Doesn't that sound fun as hell?
Mm-hmm.
Dude, could you imagine like me, sunglasses and all, like cross-legged sitting on a sittable lawnmower, like, don't talk to her. This is her moment. Like, that sounds so fun to me.
I also fantasize of yard work.
Do you?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, I didn't think so. You're also from Arizona. How do you do yard work there?
Yard work is hell in Arizona.
Did you have like rocks instead of grass? That feels like an Arizona thing.
It's a big gravel state.
Makes sense.
And people will sometimes treat their gravel as if it's a lawn.
Sure.
Where they will be like, you're getting it all out of order. And it's like, dude, it's rocks.
Like, you need a shell.
Like, let's chill. Why are you raking them? They're rocks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about these original songs.
Sure.
Here's the deal. I will not deny that some of these songs are bangers melodically. Mm-hmm. They're very fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Why is every single song about a physical characteristic of one of the actors? Ian Brennan, could you not have been a little more creative with this?
I know. I wonder, hear me out, if it was Ryan Murphy being like, I want Santana to sing a song about Sam, and then I want blah, 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 blah. Or if it was Ian Brennan's, like, all of his ideas. I wonder.
I think it was probably Ian Brennan.
Ian Brennan, pull your head out of your ass.
But, Santana song is just like, Cord Overstreet has big lips. Mm-hmm. And guess what, everyone? Now he sucks in his lips in pictures because he's so self-conscious of them. Literally. And then the Puck song is like, what is her name?
Lauren Zeiss.
No, the actor.
Ashley Fink?
Ashley Fink. It's like, Ashley Fink is fat. Mm-hmm. And then the Mercedes song is like, Amber Riley is black and fat. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make her a massive stereotype.
Literally. It is so stupid. And the, like, Trouty Mouth is fun. Like, it's a fun, mm-hmm. it's a fun, you're so right. It's like melodically fun. Like, Big Ass Heart is like kind of interesting to listen to. Hell to the No is very fun. And I understand that. But like, all of these piss me off to no end. The shit that pisses me off the most is Puck got in so much trouble with Lauren for doing mm-hmm. Fat Bottom Girls.
Yeah.
If I was in Lauren's shoes, I would take Fat Bottom Girls 100 million fucking times over than I would take Big Ass Heart. It is so awful. It is awful. It is awful. Like, so rude.
Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't me being like, and so actually Fat Bottom Girls was a good thing for him to sing.
No.
But like, at least that song is like complimentary.
Yeah.
Whereas this song is like, you broke all my chairs. Mm-hmm. You have to buy 2 plane tickets. Mm-hmm. Like, goodness sakes.
Literally. And it's like, I get it. It's about more than her body, because I guess it's her heart. But also, it is definitely not.
No, it's
not. It is super not. Like, at least Fat Bottom Girls inherently isn't a song that, like, I think is offensive, but I understand how, like, Lauren would be upset with someone, like, just, like you know,
that's
only
their
talking about her
first
body.
Pick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that. Like, that makes sense to me, narrative-wise, why that would be hurtful. But it is not inherently, like, rude, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this song is so rude. Oh my God, I hate it. And then they force her to fucking dance to it. And Lauren has to like it. And it is so fucked up. I hate it. Oh my God.
I cannot deny, though, that it's very catchy.
Yeah, well, it was released. You can go download it if you want.
That was all of these songs. I was like, why is it so catchy, though?
I know.
Which is weird, because then the song that's supposed to be amazing that Rachel sings, Get This Right, I couldn't tell you how single line of that song goes. I've listened to it like
neither.
3 times. Like, the least catchy song I've ever heard.
And like, oof. We'll talk about our feelings about that in a minute. But yes, these original songs, toe-tapping faux show, but also so rude. God.
Also, the Mercedes one, you talking about how it references a lot of her past plot lines just made me realize how many Mercedes plot lines are just about food.
Literally, it's so, like, stupid.
And when watching this episode, I was like, are Tina and Mercedes even in this show at this point?
Literally, I don't think
they don't
so.
Do anything. Mercedes has not had a plot line since The Substitute. Mm-hmm. And like, she does get more recognition than Tina, because at least they will give her songs. Mm-hmm. But like, outside of Mercedes' songs, Amber Riley is given nothing to do. They
exactly.
do not do. She has no arc. She has no more than like 3 lines an episode. Like, it's such a waste of her talents.
Absolutely.
And then Tina is literally like the group's background singer.
Mm-hmm. Tina, they did you so wrong. Tina, Cohen Chang.
Like, Tina, they wheel her out to stand behind the character who's getting focused on and sing back up, and then they give her 1 line an episode, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, literally, she's just Santana's accompanist in this episode, and that's the biggest thing she does the whole episode.
I know.
And, like, I couldn't even tell you when the last Tina plotline was. Like, duets? I guess Special Education had a little bit with her thinking that Mike and Brittany were cheating.
Yeah, I guess. But it still wasn't even about her. And like we said before, like, a lot of times with this show especially, they like in, like, they don't know what to do with a character, just put them in a relationship. We'll deal with them later. Like, they have something to tie them over. Like, it is so weird. And, like, I think the thing that makes me angry about Hell to the No and, like, Mercedes in general is I think, like, Mercedes as a character is so interesting, and they fall so frequently onto stereotypes about, mm-hmm. like, Black women that are so dumb. And, like, you know, like, Mercedes is so much, and she is such, like, a amazing character that could be so many things, and they just, like, are like, well, she's a great singer, and, like, you know, she loves tater tots. And it's like, golly, she could be mm-hmm. so much. Oh my gosh.
And
I hate
that's
it.
Like, this episode, I was like, enough with Rachel. Like, Rachel is so focused on, in this show in general, but then in this episode, she's so focused on, and I also don't even think she's interesting. And I'm like, you got freaking Tina, who's just pretending to play piano. Mm-hmm. And Mercedes, who gets, like, a borderline racist song and then is told to be quiet the rest of the episode. Yeah. Like, give them something else to do. I don't care about this.
But listen, if Hell to the No was performed at regionals, I think they might have maybe deserved the win, because that song is so fun.
I do like it more than Get This Right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Only Child real fast.
Wow. Only Child. Very exciting. Tell me about how you feel about Only Child.
We don't have to talk about Only Child. That's not very interesting.
Yeah, honestly, it's truly not. And I think, hear me out, Headband is way funnier.
Mm-hmm. And I think Headband is funnier as well.
Like, and I understand, like, this one is, I guess, a little deeper. So I understand, like, the thought process of putting my headband first. But it is not, when you think of, like, the song that Rachel wrote, you don't think of Only Child.
Yeah, you think of Headband. That's why it's Britney's favorite song.
Exactly.
And yes, everyone, we have been getting this for months in, like, DMs and tweets. It is canon that Santana Lopez's favorite song is You Ought to Know by Alanis
Morissette.
Even though
she freaking never sang it. Rude.
That's why Santana and I are kindred spirits, because we both love that song.
Yes. I mean, that song rocks.
All right. Do you want to go to Faberry?
Yes, please.
Faberry Watch.
Oh, yeah. Faberry Watch.
The fact that Quinn Fabray is obsessed with prom is so funny to me. Like, it is such, like, a funny hyperfixation for her that I think makes so much sense. And if we have the headcanon that I think everyone who listens to the podcast is at least subscribing to, at least to indulge us, is that, like, you know, Quinn is headcanon queer, also I think queer in the show, it makes sense that she's so obsessed with her image and how other people are perceiving her that, like, this is gonna be her moment. Like, everything will be okay. Everyone will perceive me in the way I want them to if I am prom queen. It makes a lot of sense to me. It's also very funny. I like the idea that, like, Quinn is, like, a naturally pretty conservative person, but also pretty smart, but is, like, throwing these, like, random, like, statistics out that, like, make no sense. Like, that's very funny. You know, she's like, well, you see, like, prom queens live an average of 5 years longer than other people. Like, where did you get that? Like, who, what? But it's funny. It's really funny. And then I like the idea that, like, she thinks that the way to get close, like, to keep Finn around is to get closer to Rachel. That's, I mean, come on, Quinn. Mm-hmm. What are you saying? What, you just want to hang out with Rachel? You want to spend time with her alone? Okay. That cutscene was them making out. I know it.
Here's the deal. I don't know what these writers' intentions were at all. It's very possible that they had absolutely no intention of any subtext with Quinn's sexuality.
Yeah.
It's also very possible that they intentionally queer baited because they wanted to get fans to watch the show.
I think that's more likely.
But watching Diana Agron's performance in this episode, I was like, you know she's gay.
Literally.
Like, the way, because some of the lines, I was like, oh, I can imagine, like, a different actor doing a different line reading of this and it coming off as, like, completely platonic. Mm-hmm. But when she's talking to Rachel and she tells Rachel that she doesn't belong here,
yeah,
and she starts crying, I was like, so you agree
yeah.
that you're in love with her.
Hear me out. That scene, I think, is so telling to Quinn's character because she is like so hyper fixated on being with Finn for so many mm-hmm. reasons. And she exclusively even tells herself, she's lying to herself, that it's for, like, he's the most popular guy in school. It's this, it's that, it's that. She's lying to herself in this moment is like, obviously, she is telling the truth. Like, there is not a doubt in my mind that, like, she is, like, lying to Rachel about, like, what she says to her because she's crying about it. She's like, Rachel, I'm keeping him from you so you can be successful. Like, why don't you understand that? Come on. You're in love with her. You want her to be successful. And you know that you can't be with her, Quinn.
And that's the thing is, like, if we got, like, Rachel McAdams as Regina George to play that exact dialogue, but as Regina George, I can see it coming off as, like, you don't belong mm-hmm. here. Like, I'm the perfect, like, going to have the perfect family and the perfect life, and you're just going to have to leave. Yeah. And it coming off as very mean girl and, like, there being no subtext whatsoever.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I mean, I'm not Diana Agron. Who knows what was going through her head? But it feels...
It definitely does.
Like... It 100% feels like she intentionally made the choice to have the subtext that she has feelings for Rachel.
I think so. I really do. And, like, I think Rachel is definitely in this headcanon of Faberi isn't as far along as her, but it's definitely hurtful to hear those words from Quinn. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of people say a lot of shit to her all the time about how, like, you know... Blah, 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 blah. She's never crying about Santana saying this to her. She's crying about Quinn, and it hurts deep because I think she has secret feelings for Quinn. And, like, Quinn, I think, in this headcanon is farther along than Rachel in, like, the understanding her feelings. God damn. It is so... This is the Faberi Watch of all Faberi Watch episodes. My gosh.
Yeah, the scene in the auditorium is like... Oh, yeah. It's not really even subtext at this point. Yeah,
I know.
All right. Do you have any more before regionals thoughts? Oh, wait, I do.
What?
I'm sorry. I was looking through my notes just to make sure. The way that Will is like, okay, you guys, like, these songs are all great, but, like, they're not going to win us regionals, which, like, true, which is why you should not do original songs at regionals. Mm-hmm. It's such a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. But anyways,
yeah.
Moving past that. Seriously, a room full of kids who have never written a song in their lives. And he's like, I think we should do... I mean, it was Rachel's idea, but he supported it. He was like, we should do original songs. That's how we'll win.
Yeah.
But the way that he's like, these songs you've written are, like, good first songs, but they're not going to win as regionals. They have to tap into something real.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very smart thing for him to say.
Yeah, totally.
And then he is like, what are things you struggle with? And they're like, the way that Miss Sylvester, a teacher at this school, treats us. And he's like, what does she do? They straight up are like, she assaults us.
Mm-hmm.
She throws sticks at us. Mm-hmm. She verbally abuses us. And at no moment is Will like...
Like, I maybe. Should call somebody about this.
Seriously, like... When Sue rigged Secret Santa, he reported her to HR. And when he has his students, like, give him an itemized list of all the ways a faculty member at this school is abusing them, he literally is, like, foaming at the mouth. He's so excited. He's like, he's oh, like, my
yes,
gosh.
We can use this.
Song fodder. Like, think of the possibilities.
See, hear me out. He's got this weird savior complex about him. He's like, I have to keep this to ourselves so you can keep honing this, mm-hmm. this, like, realness. My God.
He's like, you have to stay miserable. Otherwise, the talent won't be as strong.
Exactly. He's an abuser.
All right, let's get to regionals.
Regionals. Okay, so let's start with non-vocal adrenaline. God, I wish it was.
Oral intensity.
That song is clean. They do a great job.
This is not me making a joke. They deserved to win this competition.
They do an awesome job.
I was like, of course the song choice is dumb. Like, it's supposed to be funny for us as an audience.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's a dumb song for them to pick. But I was like, honestly, in my opinion, they had the best performance out of the three groups. They should have won this competition.
No, seriously. It is Colleen. And I understand, like, looking at the judges, I can see how they didn't pick them because the nun was like, yeah, this feels pandering even to me. I'm not voting for them. So I see how they didn't win. Like, I like when they humanize the judges so we can see that, like, they're just people, like, voting. Like, it doesn't mean that, like, they're better in any way. It's just, like, they all have their opinions about things. So, yeah, I understand that. But, yeah, that song is clean, and Sue Sylvester should be coaching a Glee Club.
Right? She's very good. Did you see that choreography? There were no mistakes.
So good. Anyway.
My issue with this whole competition, besides the fact that I think the performances are lackluster, is that it has no stakes.
Oh, literally.
The stakes are on the ground. No part of the audience believes that the New Directions aren't going to go to nationals because literally in the first episode of this season, Will says, we're going to nationals.
Yeah.
And so like season one, sectionals is like very high stakes. Like Will is not there. The club could get shut down. All of this stuff. And then regionals, of course, like sky high. Regional season one is one of the best episodes ever. And then like season two sectionals, they still manage to have stakes with like Kurt transferring to Dalton and all of that. And also just like it's a very fun episode. Mm-hmm. And this one I'm like, of course, Sue's group is going to lose. Like there's no chance. And that's such like what could have been a very fun concept they absolutely wasted. Mm-hmm. Like having Sue coach a rival Glee Club is such a fun idea. And besides her pushing the coach down the stairs, which in fairness to them is very funny, nothing came of it.
Nope.
Like no fun plot lines, no scenes, nothing came of that idea. It's such a waste.
And like think of season one, like the rivalry between like the New Directions and between Vocal Adrenaline, thank you. The rivalry between New Directions and Vocal Adrenaline is palpable, and it is so high stakes. And like with Rachel and with Jesse, and like, you know, they're like trying to figure out each other's weaknesses. They could have done that, but like, you know, obviously they could have like tried to like do something along those lines, but this doesn't hold a candle to it. Like it's so cool. Sue is the coach for the other team? Bye. I don't care.
Also, like, we do have the Warblers there, but, like, you can just feel that our time at Dalton is coming to a close. Mm-hmm. It's like they never bothered to flesh out any of the other Warblers, so clearly they're not going to stick around. And Blaine and Kurt are now together, so that tension is now over. So you're like, oh, so this is, like, the bow for the Warblers. Like, they're going to be out of the show now. Like, you can just, the entire regional competition, the biggest stakes are, oh, they're doing original songs and they're bad songwriters.
Yeah.
So that could blow up in their face. But, like, I think it's so bland. I think it's so boring.
I know. But to talk about candles.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen Hey Monday in concert. Did you know that?
I did not.
They went on tour with Cobra Starship and Metro Station and Fallout Boy. And it was in 2009, and it was the first concert I ever went to that was general admission, so you weren't sitting. So I got to, and I wanted to go in the mosh pit, and then I got trampled. I fell, and then I got stepped on, like on my stomach. It was awful.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah,
it was awful.
It was like Monday.
And then I like for years and years and years, like had like such anxiety when going to concerts, which is crazy because like my family goes to concerts all the time. Like in high school, I went to concerts like once a week. And I have refused to like go into like crowds. I would have to be at the back with like, because I was really nervous. I was getting trampled. I don't have that problem very much anymore, but is that awful?
Yeah. That is terrible.
Thank you. It's a long time ago. It was like 12 years ago now. My God. How old am I? This song is stupid.
Yeah.
Not even that, like, the song, like, I'm like, Hey Monday does a great job of seeing them do it live, but, like, it is such a terrible choice for a competition. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You know my problems with why they picked it. I don't think it, and like, it is weird. And I don't think they do a great job.
Yeah, I don't think it, I don't think it fits nothing. Well in Chris Colfer's voice.
No, it does nothing for any of them.
Yeah.
And they could have done, like, pick a duet. I don't know. It's weird. Ugh, random. But they were like, we want Blaine to do, like, a deep cut, like an emo kid song. Weird.
Oh, my gosh. Also, like, do you, first of all, do you bow after your set in general? But beyond that, do you bow after each individual song?
Literally, I was so embarrassed for them. Like, I was like, stop this now. Bow afterwards. Like, bring Kurt up after the Pink song, please. Thank you. Super weird.
Also, the audience gave that number a standing ovation. Like, okay, you guys, let's raise our standards a little bit.
And like, it is not, the song is not offensive to listen to, but like, yeah. The Warblers are a game. They are like, they are an incredible group of performers. And I do not buy for 2 seconds that they would ever put this up for a competition. Because they are smart performers.
Mm-hmm.
Idiots. They did better at the Gap.
That I would say most Warblers performances were better than this one.
Oh, I would say both of them.
What is up with them in competitions?
I don't.
They like. Well, because
they don't want them to win.
Group.
They don't want That's them to win true. Because That's they have their. This show is gaslighting us into thinking that the New Directions is a good. It's a good show choir, but they're not.
But hear me out. In special education, like, the New Directions deserve to win, like, by a mile.
I think so. But, like, show choir-wise, they are not exceptional, you know?
Yeah, like, let's see them try to do that Jesus is My Friend choreography.
No. And, like, I think that's what makes the New Directions special and, like, a group that I want to watch a show about is, like, you know, they're underdogs. They're not like the best dancers, blah, 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 blah. Like, I hear that. That's a show I want to watch. That's a show that I care about and like people that I care about. But like, they keep, especially with the Warblers mostly, they keep dumbing the Warblers down to make the New Directions look better.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like, just like do what the New Directions do best. My headband.
Yeah, do my headband.
My God.
Let's talk about the New Directions. First off, this, in my opinion, is a contender for the worst competition episode. Mm-hmm. This, I think in everybody's opinion, is like objectively the winner of the absolute worst competition outfit in the history of Glee.
It is so
it is
funny.
Heinous.
I know, but like... Hear me out. I dress just like that. Like the capri leggings with the Doc Martens and the dress. I did that. Oh my God. So often. I still dress like this, you guys, just without the leggings.
But like the leggings and Doc Martens aside, the dresses alone don't even look good.
Yeah.
They look so cheap.
I know.
I don't know.
They've had
who
way
designed
nicer
this outfit.
Dresses. I know.
They should be fired.
I know. Get It Right, we've talked about, is bad. Like, the song, I think, is so weird and so, like, the worst of Rachel's character. Like, and Rachel being like, I mean every word. I was like, Rachel, shut the hell up. But that aside, we know that we don't like that. Hear me out. I think Loser Like Me is awesome.
Oh, I think of all the original songs,
song.
I think it's the best one by a mile.
It is so fun. And like, the song is so like, God, it is such a weird time capsule of 2011 to me. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like every pop song sounded just like this. So I'm not surprised that it like, you know, was very successful and like a bunch of people downloaded it. Like, I'm not surprised about that, that I had it. It was incredible. Very fun, very exciting. I swear in my dreams, I think about Santana going, I don't care, all the time, every day.
I do love that moment. This is a song that, like, as a song, I think is, like, good enough. Like, yes. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you have if you downloaded it. Have you heard the bridge which got cut from the episode?
I'm sure I have.
There's
Sing
like
it
a,
for me.
Okay, yo.
Yo.
Them cutting this bridge is the absolute best idea they could have had, because the rest of the song is like pretty good. This bridge, it would have been like, no, you guys are in last place. So first, the entire extended scene is on YouTube, because they like filmed the bridge and then they just had to cut it for time. And it's like everyone kind of like stands in a semicircle and they all like jump into the circle and they dance. And all it really does is highlight the fact that this is not a show choir of dancers. Mm-hmm. Like, they are movers, not dancers.
Yeah.
But that part's like fine. The lyrics are, hey, you over there, keep the L up in the air. Hey, you over there, keep the L up, cause I don't care. You can throw your sticks, you can throw your stones, oh, like a rocket, just watch me go. Yeah, L-O-S-E-R. I can only be who I are.
I do remember this, I do.
Immediate disqualification. The Glee Club is shutting down. I'm calling Principal Figgins, demanding they revoke your funding. That's the lyric you wrote. I can only be who I are.
I do remember
that. And literally, I was watching this with my sister, and she just goes, why didn't they just say, we can only be who we are? I was like, because it makes too much sense. They had to ruin the song with that lyric.
I know. It is so bad.
Oh, my gosh.
But that song, it rocks. I feel like the song is pretty good. I feel like the performance is not awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it obviously was meant to be a song that, like, is an earworm and, like, sounds just like every Metro Station song. So, like, you know, take this. But, like, the performance is the worst choreography I've ever seen on the New Directions. I usually really like the New Directions choreography. I think they're pretty good at, like, highlighting, like, their good dancers and, like, you know, hiding their bad ones, but, like, it is bad. And, like, the performance feels so relaxed and, like, mm-hmm. like, it feels like it is specifically for the Glee concert. Like, if this was done at the Glee concert, that would make sense because we all, like, care about these people inherently. But, like, if I was an audience member with a random group of teenagers acting all buddy-buddy with me, showing me an inside joke that I don't understand, I wouldn't get it. I wouldn't like it. I think it's a weird choice for the competition.
Yeah. Also, are they allowed to have set pieces? And did they
bring that... I've never seen them have props before.
And did they bring that icy machine from McKinley? Like, was that on the bus with them?
Literally, I guess.
Okay, so here's where Rachel really gets on my nerves.
Okay,
she has been the beginning of the episode. I'm like, whatever. She finds out that Quinn and Finn are dating for literally the third time and acts like it's the first time receiving this information.
My God, Rachel.
How many times are the writers going to have Rachel learn that Finn and Quinn are dating and be surprised? We had it in Silly Love Songs. We had it last episode. It's not news to anyone.
No.
Anyways, but the fact that she gets a whole solo number that she wrote. Literally, the bridge of this number is, so I throw up my fists, throw a punch in the air, and accept the fact that sometimes life isn't fair. My mental image is Rachel Berry doing the ending shot of The Breakfast Club, where she's just like, life isn't fair!
Yeah.
And then it's like, won't you come see about me? Like her just with her fist punched into the sky.
It's just pitch perfect.
And then she gets the lead on Loser Like Me, a song that she had no part in writing. Why are the writers giving her this song?
It
makes me so angry.
Especially with the characters that we know. We know that Santana and Mercedes both fight for solos fairly actively. Mm-hmm. Like, it would make no sense. It makes no sense to me that they would write her in as the lead for a song she didn't write.
That's what bothers me about it, is it's just like the way that everyone like kisses Rachel's feet in this episode pisses me off. Like, I've said it before, I'll say it again. The reason that I like Rachel Berry and the reason that like she continues to be compelling for me is that the show tends to be like kind of self-aware that she is a little much, and the other characters will like call her out on crap. Mm-hmm. And then in this, now flipping the narrative, in this episode for Rachel Berry to become the Blaine Anderson of the New Directions, mm-hmm. where everyone is like, we want you to have the solos. Please sing them, Rachel. We unanimously crown you the MVP of the club. I'm like, great. I don't like her anymore.
Yeah, literally.
I hate her. I don't want her to be on the show.
No, yeah, I completely agree.
It's so annoying. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
And...
Also,
whatever. I don't even remember. I don't even remember what I was going to say. It just makes me mad.
Also, where did Kirk get those foam fingers? Did he just bring those just in case?
I wonder if, like, Rachel handed him a bag.
She's like, these are going to come in handy. You'll find out why.
Maybe. I buy that. And I buy that they would vote her MVP because she's the one who, like, suggested the original songs. Was that the move? I don't know.
It just makes me annoyed.
Yeah.
Why? But, I understand that Santana can't sing Loser Like Me because she's not a loser.
Yes. But then they have fucking Finn singing.
That's so true. Like, that makes point as much make sense any as Finn. Sense.
Exactly.
But, like, why not have Mercedes or Tina, who actually wrote the song, sing lead on this?
I know.
I would love a Mercedes or Tina and Artie duet for Loser Like Me. Yeah. That'd be the best.
Absolutely.
Ugh.
Stupid. And it sucks to hear that Kevin McHale came in to sing the song. Like, and who knows at what point he got cut from the song or why he got cut from the song. But, like, Ryan Murphy just, like, is obsessed with Lea Michele. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, it pisses me off. There's no reason, like, why would she sing this song? She already has an entire solo to herself that she gets pretty frequently. Like, it makes no sense to me.
Ryan Murphy really put his stamp on this episode when he said, four songs in the competition, two led by Blaine, two led by Rachel.
Literally.
Do you have other regional thoughts?
I don't think so.
I just want to give a shout out to the judges. Rod Remington, apparently show choir judging is his side hustle. He is a judge at every single competition.
He is so, like, that scene is very funny to me. Mm-hmm. Like, with, like, Rod Remington being like, my hairdresser is a gay. Very funny. And, like,
talking about how they can raise a family of wigs.
Yeah. And, like, the nun being like, is that a gay school or does it just appear gay? So
that line is so good.
Because it's so how people treat the warblers. Like, are they all gay there? Mm-hmm. And that's what Kurt said when he got there. That's so funny.
And Kathy Griffin just, like, playing Victoria Jackson and playing, literally, like, the opposite of Kathy Griffin in real life.
When you talked about Victoria Jackson earlier, I was like, oh, she's just being Kathy Griffin in this show.
No, yeah, it's funny because they have Kathy Griffin say, she has a line where she says, the last thing we need to do is send a message to children that gay is okay. And then literally fast forward 24 hours, Victoria Jackson is on Showbiz Tonight saying that exact thing verbatim, unironically.
That is so funny. I love the, like, I lost the election. There will be a recount. Like, so funny.
When she says, when I lost the election, I didn't sing about how I was a loser. I tweeted that Obama's a terrorist. And then the nun is like, why? And she says, so matter of fact, because it's true.
Yeah.
Very funny.
So ridiculous. It's also funny coming from Kathy Griffin. Her saying things like that is so, oh my God. I love Kathy Griffin. She's very funny.
My sister was way into My Life on the D-List when I was a kid. Dude,
my parents loved that show.
I watched that show way too young.
I remember my grandma really liked that show. And then it came out that, like, Kathy Griffin was, like, you know, pretty liberal. And then they started hating Kathy Griffin. Okay, let's talk about post regionals. We don't get we just have the Pavarotti funeral,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, confirmation that Kurt and Blaine are together. They hold hands.
Ayo, ayo.
And then we have the MVP moment.
Ugh, I hate that moment so much.
I do love to see them hugging, and I do like to see them, like, supporting each other. I love these kids, you know I do, but also it is so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I already voiced my opinions on, like, the Rachel love this episode.
Yeah.
I just think there's a balance that the writers have to hit with that character, and they leaned too far to the one side this episode.
I agree.
It didn't work for me.
I agree.
All right.
Is that the end of the episode?
Yeah.
I guess. Wow.
That's Regionals, season two.
Uh-huh. What is this episode freaking called?
Original Songs.
Original Song.
I truly, hear me out.
Why'd they write original songs?
It's
so weird.
If you guys like this episode, I genuinely am very curious to hear your take on it.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think that the reason it got voted most popular is because it's the episode where Clang gets together.
That makes sense to me. And those moments are beautiful.
Yeah, they're great. But if you have other stuff about this episode that you like absolutely love and you feel like we totally overlooked, please send us an email, send us a voicemail. I would love to hear about it.
Absolutely. We also, we didn't talk about the Santitney scene in the hallway.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't talk about that. How do you feel about that scene?
That was good. I think it's I think it's good that like it is not a Santana or Britney centric episode. It like doesn't really fit in the episode structure, like what it's supposed to be about.
But it's still like volleying that that storyline to keep going, and I appreciate that for sure.
Yeah,
you don't want to like drop it off for episodes and episodes. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I think it fits to both of their characters that Britney would be like, "Wait, you're still with Sam?" And then Santana being like, you're still with Artie. Shut up, you know? Like that scene a lot. Is that the end of the episode?
Yeah, that's our original song, everyone. That's
ooh, Tweedledum and Tweedle fake boobs.
Very good.
Very good.
Very funny line.
Very funny line.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
Okay.
All right. Lena, what's your best part?
My best part is the cut scene of Quinn and Rach are making out. Just kidding. But all jokes aside, the Fabary of the episode is probably my favorite part of the episode. I think it's the most strong. I love it. It's very interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel is a monster in this episode. Quinn is the love of my life, and I love it very much. So I'm going to say that is my best part. My best song in the episode? Jeez. I do love Loser Like Me. I think I'm going to pick... I'm going to pick Misery. We'll see what you pick, and then I'll tell you what my secondary pick would have been. Ian, what was your best part?
My best part, straight up, when the winners announced of regionals and Sue punches and one punch KO of the presenter. And the sound she makes when she hits the ground
is very so funny. Good. It's so
the
funny.
The funniest part of the episode for me.
So funny.
My best song, I was on the same thing where I was like, it's between Misery and Loser Like Me, and I'll do whatever one that Lena doesn't say.
Oh, amazing.
I would say that I probably like Misery the more than Loser Like Me, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in between those two. And then I also was like, oh, I really like Blackbird, too. If they were smart, they could have had Kurt sing Blackbird for...
Yeah, that would be better than Candles.
Wait, my God. Yeah, I want to give a special shout out to the Clayne kiss. It is a beautiful moment and like such an iconic Glee moment, and I love it. So we got to say that too. Ian, what was your worst part?
Oh, my worst part is that last competition episode, Will learned this lesson of like, you have so many talented kids in this Glee club, maybe spread the love around.
Yeah.
And the result was so exciting. And then this competition, Will's like, okay, so now Rachel gets literally every solo except for half the song, which is going to Finn Hudson. It just bothers me so much.
Yeah.
And then to a lesser extent, but the same on the Warbler side, that Blaine learns this lesson of like, I should share the spotlight. So Kurt gets half a song and then I get everything else.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Telly Lung was on the Broadway.
I know.
Why are they not letting him sing?
Stupid.
All right, what was your worst part?
The fact that they're trying to gaslight us into thinking that Big Ass Heart is less offensive than
Fat Bottom Girls. So many things about this episode really piss me off, but that, I cannot let that stand. I cannot. Probably that.
All right. Well, there's not really an assignment of the week.
You didn't write a song?
Darn it.
Dang it. I didn't write a song. I have never written a song. Well, no, I tried my hand at writing songs when I was, 12. They did not go well. I'm not a poetic woman. I don't know if you know this about me.
My freshman year of college, I took a history of musical theater class. And one of the assignments we had to do was we had to write the lyrics to an unconventional love song. So our professor was like, it has to be about love, but it cannot be a song about romantic love. I love you so much. Mm-hmm. He's like, something else. It can be platonic love. Just like something besides like romantic love. And I didn't do any melody, but I wrote the lyrics to a love song to Netflix.
You are so funny.
And that's that's my turn at songwriting. Fun fact, our professor he's a composer. He like had a show that was on the West End, and he told us that he would pick his favorite song, like his favorite lyrics, and he would write music for it. And you know whose song won?
Mine.
E.P. Tiffany.
I remember. I was wondering when I had heard the story, and E.P. Tiff was the one who told me. Mm-hmm. That is so awesome.
She wrote a song literally based on a murder mystery party that we had attended.
Dude, I love murder mystery parties.
Where like Tiffany's character was like a young socialite, and a bunch of us had been given the objective to propose to her and try and win her hand.
Dude, that is awesome. I want to do that so hard.
The objective that she was given was to accept every single proposal you receive and try and get as much attention as possible. And so she
to happen to me bad.
It was very fun. So she wrote a song from her character's perspective called The Ring is the Thing. And it's just about how, like, she doesn't really care about the guy. She's just looking for more jewelry. It was very fun. And then
Tiffany
she sang
Allen
it.
Tiffany Allen is the smartest person I've ever met in my life. That is so funny.
And then she sang it at a concert at the end of the year. It was very
fun. Oh, my God. I love that. That is very exciting.
So that's my original song, is my losing song that I wrote about Netflix 8 years ago. No, 7 years ago.
Wow.
Well, there it is.
Fun. Season wrap on the Loser Like Me episode and the Clayton Kiss episode and the Faberry episode that is actually called Original Song. If you have thoughts on this episode, we super want to hear them. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to talk about them. And we want to talk about them on our mini-sode. You can send us a voicemail with your thoughts to anchor.fm/recoveringleak. Or if you have lots of thoughts, you can send them an email to recoveringleak@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on Instagram, I would. At recoveringleak_podcast, the same handle for TikTok, and then on Twitter we're at recoveringleak.
If you want to support our podcast financially, out of the kindness of your heart, you can at anchor.fm/recoveringleak and just click the support button. If you want to support our podcast verbally, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. I guess not verbally, but like in writing. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Those reviews and ratings help get our podcast recommended to more people.
Definitely. Well, God, I love you guys so much. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
Bye, you guys. Love you so much.
Here's an original kiss on your forehead.
Well, I've never heard that kiss before. That was so unique to you.
I know.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please. I'm staying with my sister. Uh-huh. And she was like, do you want to do a juice cleanse? And
I was like, shut your mouth. Are you just peeing out of your butt?
I told her, I was like, TMI, everyone. I was like, every time that I have to fart, I'm afraid that water's going to come out. But like, we're doing it for 2 days, and like, truly, I mean, there's a lot of research that shows that juice cleanses aren't as healthy as people like to think they are. And I'm here to offer my own research, which is that I am exhausted. Oh my goodness.
Man, that's just too much pooping for me. Have you ever pooped your pants?
Yeah, I have.
I never have.
You never have? Mm-mm. I pooped my pants as recently as 2015.
Really?
I was a legal adult.
That is so funny. I have a theory that it comes for everyone. Much like death, poop in your pants comes to every adult.
Yeah, like, it's creeping up behind you. I know. Just wait.
Dude, literally, I got this acting job and I was like, fuck, I hope this isn't the summer I shit my pants.
Like, do you think it's going to happen when you're on stage?
I hope not.
That would be a show to remember.
Literally.
Oh my gosh.
I hope not.